sponsor Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. Tonight on Queer Voices, David Elliott will join us from Washington, D.C. to discuss New York's legislation of same-sex unions and other things that affect the GLBT community on a national scale. In News Wrap, crowds celebrated Gay Pride last week in Houston, New York City, San Francisco, and Chicago, which had to overcome slashed float tires. And there was a tragic accident that ended the Anchorage Pride Parade. Most Rhode Island LGBT advocacy groups condemned the less-than-equal civil unions law passed this week by the state legislature. They say it perpetuates discrimination, and many lesbian and gay couples say that they will wait for full civil marriage when it is offered before they tie the knot. Meanwhile, the American Medical Association has joined other U.S. healthcare professionals to prescribe matrimonial equality for healthier same-gender couples and families. After News Wrap, the feature segment of This Way Out, husband, father, writer, activist Dan Savage will discuss his evolution from wisecracking sex-advice columnist to creating the It Gets Better campaign, his personal story of overcoming school bullying and family life with his longtime partner Terry Miller and their adopted son. In our second hour, J.D. Doyle presents a special edition of Queer Music Heritage devoted to the late Stephen Grossman. This show is about the release of a CD of his material recorded in early May of 1991, about 6 weeks before his death. It took about 20 years for this material to make it to the CD release phase, and you'll hear that story as told by his friends and the album's producers. And, Jack, happy 4th of July.
Well, yes. And
happy 4th of July to you, too.
We're doing a live show again tonight, as we do every Monday, whether it's a holiday or not. So
there's no holiday for volunteers.
That's right, and especially for radio, because radio is always live. We will be doing like a different show tonight because we're going to be doing that episode of Out Radio in the second hour. But
that's J.D. Doyle's other program, isn't it?
Yes, we will be talking shortly to David Elliott. But last week we wrapped up Pride and sort of going through a post-Pride depression.
It is. This week was, like, it was so much fun. It was
right.
That was a letdown.
Not as serious as it used to be, but, definitely still going through it. And I had a great time at Pride coming on after hours after that. Brian, how is your post-Pride depression going right now?
Well, I'm recovering. It's been a lot of kind of a letdown after all the events that we had.
Being like Grand Marshal was a big deal.
Well, it was a big deal, and it was a huge honor, and, there's a lot of Pride events that I didn't know about that are going on, like, the week before.
Yeah.
And you have to, as Grand Marshal, go and attend them and kind of spread the goodwill of Pride and,
and be busy.
Yeah. But I kind of have a little bit of a letdown now, so I'm kind of, like, recovering. But my partner's a lot happier now.
Well, we at Queer Voices congratulate you on being Grand Marshal.
Well, thank you.
Certainly, I don't have it as much as I used to have it, so it's Pride Depression. Anyway,
or was that a hangover?
No, it was not a hangover. It definitely was not a hangover. It was a natural high. We have David Elliott calling us from Washington to sort of give us an update. We haven't talked to you for a little while, David. You're going to talk about what happened in New York recently.
Well, good evening, Jack, and happy 4th of July to you. I feel like I'm in a bit of a war zone right now because there are explosions going on outside my window.
Hopefully it's just fireworks.
Is that those rockets' red glare?
Yeah, it's just the fireworks. You know, the official fireworks have already ended. They ended about 45 minutes or so ago. But there, in D.C., you have a lot of unofficial fireworks. I don't know if y'all get that in Houston or not.
No, actually, we don't have too much of that. In fact, most of the fireworks around the state were canceled because of the drought. And but there are two going on in Houston, one at Miller Outdoor Theater and one at Eleanor Tinsley Park. And they are very carefully watching them so that there would be no problem afterwards.
Well, we wouldn't want the rest of the state to burn down now, would we?
No, no, absolutely not.
So, Jack, I wanted to talk to you about a couple of things tonight. First, of course, the historic fight victory for marriage equality in New York State, which happened exactly 10 days ago, about this time at night, in fact. And then I wanted to say a couple of brief words regarding the presidential race. Let's start out with New York. New York, and I'm sure that you talked about this on the program 1 week ago, New York became the fifth state, in addition to the District of Columbia, to legalize marriage equality. Probably three states will follow not too long from now in some particular order, those states being Maryland, California, and New Jersey, bringing us up to eight. Now, a lot of us, when we won this tremendous historic victory 10 days ago, a lot of us were following it on Facebook, on Twitter, on YouTube, on our mass media. You know, it was the lead story in both the New York Times and the Washington Post. And it felt like, to many, like it was maybe the tipping point in the fight for marriage equality in this country. I want to argue to you that it was, but it wasn't. Now, it sounds like I'm arguing two different things, two different sides, and in a way I am, but let me explain. It was a tipping point for Democrats. No longer will Democrats running for federal office be able to stake an anti-gay claim on this issue. Even President Obama, if you've seen his most recent words on the issue, is starting to be wishy-washy. You know, he started talking about how his position is evolving. He's opening the door to finally come out in favor of marriage equality, as did Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who just 2 years ago, 3 years ago, was running on a campaign of opposing marriage equality. So things have changed among the Democrats, among the Democratic Party. Democrats will never be able to go back to the discriminatory days of yesterday. And oh boy, there went another firework outside my window. So in that way, we have reached a tipping point, but I argue to you that we really, as a nation, will not have reached a tipping point on this issue until a southern state passes marriage equality.
You're absolutely right, David.
And, you know, Jack, I don't know who's going to be first. It might be Virginia. It might be Georgia. It might be Florida. I doubt it will be Texas, my home state. I'm sorry about that. I wish it would be. But that's when we know we have arrived, when we start winning these victories in the South.
Understand, yes. Because, you know, it took so long before marriage between people of different races were allowed in certain states in the South.
And that took a U.S. Supreme Court ruling. Loving v. Virginia, which was handed down in, I want to say, 1968. I might be off a year or so there. And I think it's going to take a U.S. Supreme Court ruling again. The California case is not going to really be ripe for consideration by the Supreme Court. There's no other case coming up through the ranks right now. So it'll take a few years to get to that level. You know, I think marriage equality will be the law of the land as a result of a Supreme Court ruling, but I think it's going to take about 4 or 5 years for us to get there.
Well, you know, and, David, as much as this is a great movement forward and we still have struggles ahead, we still do not have basic protection for non-discrimination in most of the jurisdictions around the country.
You're absolutely right, and that kind of dovetails with another point I wanted to make, which is that marriage equality does not equate progressive values per se. And I want to give you an example of this. People are talking about New York Governor Andrew Cuomo being a one-day presidential candidate, a one-day presidential frontrunner because of his leadership on this issue. And I will grant you that he was a leader on this one issue of marriage equality, but look at everything else he did during the recent New York state legislative session. He cut funding for education. He threw teachers under the bus, many of which will be laid off. He launched vicious attacks on public employees and unions. He cut social services spending. In other words,
he was Perry in Texas.
that's a really good, interesting analogy. He was bad. He was not a progressive leader that we would hope him to be, although he was on this one particular issue.
Well, you know, we haven't heard much about that down here because there were so many other states were dealing with those problems, including Texas. You know, of course, we heard a lot about Wisconsin, which we wouldn't think that would be happening, but it's happening all over the country. And I know, you know, the budgets are tight, but the fact is, if you're not putting money into education, where is the future of this country?
Well, and, you know, that kind of ties into the presidential race, because if Rick Perry runs for president, and right now he is doing everything you would expect a presidential candidate to do, he has quietly dispatched top aides to Iowa, to South Carolina, to New Hampshire, to start doing the planning that needs to be done on the ground on those states. And Perry, if he runs, and he's going to make a decision this month, we'll know next month, he is going to be talking about how Texas has created more jobs during this recession than any other state in the country. And numerically, yeah, he has. Well, or Texas has. However, what we have to ask is, what kind of jobs are these? They're agriculture jobs. They're jobs at McDonald's and at Starbucks. They're jobs that pay, in many cases, $7.50 an hour. They're not jobs that we would want. They're not jobs we would want our children to want. They're not jobs that can sustain a middle-income family. They're not good American jobs with good American benefits.
Okay.
So true.
And, you know, I wanted to say something about the presidential race. Right now, you know, granted we've got 7 or 8 Republicans in there. A new House member from Michigan just joined the race yesterday. But as it stands right now, we're looking at a 2-person Republican primary. Let me repeat that. A 2-person Republican primary between Mitt Romney and Michelle Bachmann. Now, friends have asked me, can Michelle Bachmann win the Republican nomination? The answer to that question is yes, she can. It's a different question from, will Michelle Bachmann win the Republican nomination? Too early to say. Too early to say. She's a serious candidate. Romney is raising a lot more money than she is, but she's getting the crowds, she's getting the base, she's getting the GOP, the Republican, the Tea Party enthusiasm.
Well, but Romney in the last 90 days really hasn't raised that much money. He has more money in his pocket right now, but he didn't raise that much. He was raising money compared to the rest, about like everybody else was.
Yeah, a little bit more. I think his fundraising report, when it comes out, is going to show about $19 million. I think that you're going to see Bachmann, Ron Paul, and Pawlenty raising in the area, the neighborhood of $4.5 million each. Kane, who's going to, I think, fade kind of quickly, not quite that much. Romney did okay, but to give your point some credence, some credit, the, of the $19 million he raised, $10 million of it came in one day in Las Vegas, and it was bundled contributions, i.e. contributions they had been planning on all along. They just got their people to report on the same day. So, yeah, there's a little bit of trickery in those numbers, and you have to look at them kind of closely. But it is true, to your point, none of the Republicans, and not even all of the Republicans combined, are raising anything like what Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were raising 4 years ago at this time.
Well, it is, and you know, we have an incumbent as president, so it's probably a little bit more difficult. The economy is down a little bit, and you know, 4 years ago, the race was totally open, and there was two strong candidates running on the Democratic side.
Well, Jack, that's completely true. I mean, you made two important points. Well, first, the economy, and second, people are hedging their bets. The people who maybe like to contribute to both sides of the fence, you know, play both sides of the fence, so to speak, they are kind of wondering if a Republican can take out Barack Obama, defeat him in November 2012. And, you know, right now, from what I'm seeing from this bunch, I'm just not seeing it happen. It could happen, but I'm just not seeing it.
Right. Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the economy.
Mm-hmm.
People are still suffering.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we're dealing right now with a 9.1% unemployment rate. People will say in Texas, well, it's lower in Texas. What is it in Texas? I think it's 8.3%, if I'm not mistaken. That's still pretty darn bad. I know people in, you know, the Queer Voices family in Houston who are unemployed and have not been able to find work. You know, I know people in Dallas that I went up to you know, through University of Texas to journalism school with, who have not been able to find work. It's bad all over in Texas, unless you want to get one of those Starbucks, McDonald's, or agricultural jobs that Rick Perry is going to be talking about.
Well, that's true, and then there's an awful lot of people who are underemployed. There's people who are afraid to leave their job because they, you know, would never find another one. You know, health coverage is a concern for most people, and, you know, I know Obama has been working on some of that stuff, but we're still a long way.
We're a long way. And, you know, it's been a disappointment in some ways, the Obama administration. You know, I have lots of talks with my friends in D.C. over this. But, you know, in 2008, it was never about Barack Obama. It was about the people supporting Barack Obama. And so we have to accept and assume some of the responsibility ourselves. We have to get out and organize and talk to voters and register voters and connect to the voters and figure out how to do that and figure out what language works with them about rebuilding the American dream, about fueling the American middle class, about how the American middle class and the American dream have been taken away from us. We have to do these things, or Barack Obama is never going to have enough support to do the things he needs to do. Now, having said all that, it would help a little bit if he'd grow a spine.
Yes, well, but, you know, and I'm not here to necessarily defend everything that's going on, but there's been a lot of stuff that's been done behind the scenes. They haven't necessarily been attention grabbers, but there has been, for GLBT rights, things done, and you probably know about them better than I do, about the change in attitude just of the administration. Of course, a lot of us wanted more. We'd certainly like to see a non-discrimination, but, you know, that's not going to happen with this present Congress. I mean, they can't even figure out how to deal with the budget or raising the debt right now, because they're not even in any type of mood to compromise, and it's like, that's what politics is about.
Well, Jack, and let's talk about, you know, let's just talk about briefly a couple of things that the Obama administration has done for the LGBT community. Of course, we're seeing an end now to Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We're seeing the Department of Justice not only say that it will no longer defend the indefensible anti-gay Defense of Marriage Act, but also this past Friday, they actually sided with a woman in California who works for the federal government and is suing to have to be able to get health care for her partner. The other side said, oh, no, you can't do that because of DOMA. And the administration came in and said, well, DOMA is blatantly unconstitutional. You should not be invoking this law, you know, in denying this woman's partner her health care. We've also seen some really good stuff happen in terms of immigration and LGBT rights. And, you know, in terms of what our diplomats abroad, people working for foreign embassies abroad, and people working for the military, what they're able to see in terms of partner rights, recognition, hospital recognition, and it goes on and on. It's a lot of there's a lot of micro, what's the word I'm looking for, microcosmic detail down there that doesn't get out, but there's some good stuff happening. Not enough, but we're moving in the right direction.
So what do you see coming up? Certainly the budget, raising the debt limit is a big thing, but what else is happening in Washington right now?
Well, let's not just think of Washington. Let's think about the whole country. We've got recall elections.
Yes, that's
starting
right.
Next week in the state of Wisconsin and continuing in August. It's going to be August before everything plays out, but there are 9 state senators up for recall in the state of Wisconsin at the same time, basically. To give you some historic perspective, Wisconsin has had a total of 4 recall elections in their entire history, and now all of a sudden they have 9 additional ones. Also, this last week, we submitted 1.3 million signatures in Ohio.
Yes.
To get a recall on the November ballot repealing this anti-labor bill that Republican Governor Kasich and the Republican legislature passed. We only needed about 360,000 signatures, but labor and our progressive allies and the LGBT community and everybody was so fired up. We actually got 1.3 million signatures, and I was weeping the other day, Jack, because I was watching a YouTube video when they were these great big men and women, I guess they belong to labor unions or something, I don't know, but these folks were big. They were unloading the signatures box by box from a huge U-Haul to deliver them to the Secretary of State's office, and I've never seen anything like that. It was just, you don't know what 1.3 million signatures looks like. We've got other special elections coming up in New Hampshire and in Maine. And let me tell you, yeah, we've got some stuff to work out with the debt ceiling in Congress, but look, the center of progressive activism has fundamentally shifted from Washington, D.C., and it's gone out to where real people live, to Madison, Wisconsin, to Dayton, Ohio, to Peoria, Illinois, to Michigan, to Houston, Texas, to Tampa and St. Petersburg, Florida. Florida has the most unpopular Republican governor in the whole country right now. He's even more unpopular than Rick Perry, really. So that's where the center of progressive activity is right now, and that's what we've got to keep our eye on.
Okay. Well, those are a number of things that are going on, and I guess it used to be that in this time of the year things were pretty quiet in Washington, but that's not the case right now.
Well, we've got a stare down going on between the Democrats and the Republicans, and we don't know what's going to happen. My side has been trying to put pressure on the Obama administration to make sure that when we work out the debt negotiation agreement, taxes on the wealthy are part of that. We've got to tax corporations. We've got to tax the wealthiest 1% in this country to get some of the revenue back that we lost because of the $3 trillion in taxes that Bush cost us because of all of his years of tax cuts for the wealthy and corporations. We also have to wind down our wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. We're spending a whole lot of money, tens of million dollars every day in those countries, and that's money that could be going to health care, could be going to Pell Grants, could be going to protect Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, our middle-class American safety net that's under attack right now.
Okay, David. Well, thank you for keeping us up to date. Let us tell us what you do for your day job.
Sure. I'm the communications director for U.S. Action, and you can find us on the Internet at www.usaction.org. And go there right now, and you'll see what we're doing right now this summer, you know, our campaign to protect the American middle class.
And that's David Elliott, who calls us almost every first Monday of the month to give us an update of what's going on in Washington and nationally. Thank you, David.
Well, thank you all so much. Happy 4th of July.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
You know, a kid who's bullied because of his race, religion, class, goes home to family members, parents of the same race, same religion, same class, who got through exactly what they're getting through and are successful adults. Queer kid goes home to no role models, no examples. And that's the difference for bullied queer kids compared to bullied straight kids, is we go home at the end of the day to parents who we're either not out to and so we can't ask for their support, or who are also bullying us. And then we're dragged to churches on Sunday where we're bullied from the pulpit.
This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Triumph and tragedy at prides from New York to St. Petersburg. Brazilian judge rules for marriage equality. And it's still getting better for Dan Savage. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending July 2nd, 2011. June's traditional month of Pride ended with massive marches in major cities around the world, where many celebrated New York becoming the sixth and largest U.S. state to open civil marriage to gay and lesbian couples. An estimated 2 million revelers took to the streets of Manhattan on June 26 in what had to be one of the most joyous New York Pride celebrations in recent memory. Governor Andrew Cuomo, who forcefully fought for the marriage equality bill and then signed it within minutes of its passage, probably received the loudest cheers along the parade route. Media reports describe a broadly smiling Cuomo joined by longtime girlfriend Sandra Lee, whose brother is gay.
The San Francisco Chronicle said that city's 41st annual Pride Parade on the same day had a distinctly grown-up feel, with more floats sponsored by charities, politicians, and corporations than the disco divas and leather daddies of yore, reporting that sunscreen and Gatorade had replaced baby oil and vodka. The participants, however, were jubilant, lauding the passage of marriage equality in New York. Erotica author and parade marshal Susie Bright, decked out in an orange cape, red leopard skin bodysuit, and silver glitter boots, called the New York News a small kernel of hope for humanity, one of the bright spots in America's culture war.
Chicago's annual Pride Parade was apparently almost a victim of that culture war. Vandals punctured the tires of 51 floats that were housed in a warehouse close to the route in the early morning hours of the day of the parade. There was no accompanying graffiti or other apparent explanation for the attacks, but Chuck Huser, the manager of Associated Attractions, which he said has been supplying floats for city parades for more than 30 years, told the Chicago Sun-Times that, "I firmly believe it was a hate crime." But by midday, almost all the floats had been repaired, and they joined the Pride procession before what organizers called a record crowd lining Halsted Street.
And tragedy struck the Pride parade in Anchorage when a pedestrian was struck and killed by a car carrying the event's grand marshal. It was not clear if mechanical failure had caused or contributed to the accident. The parade was canceled, and participants were directed to a nearby park for what became a much more subdued Pride observance.
But hundreds of thousands marched with Pride on June 25th in Paris, many demanding that France follow New York's lead to grant marriage rights to same-gender couples. France's National Assembly rejected a Socialist Party-sponsored bill in mid-June to do that, even though recent polls now show majority support in the country for marriage equality.
An estimated 700,000 celebrants marched in downtown Berlin on the same day for that city's 33rd annual Christopher Street Day Parade. The theme of the procession, with more than 45 colorful floats and 9 marching contingents, was Fair Play for Diversity. Christopher Street Day is celebrated in several other major cities across Germany. A large event is scheduled for July 3rd in Cologne.
About 100,000 people turned out for Barcelona's Pride Parade on June 26th. City officials and members of the Catalonian Parliament joined the march from Plaza de la Universidad to Plaza de España. Singer and TV personality Alaska also joined the festivities.
Elsewhere in Europe, however, Russian police officers roughly arrested 14 activists attempting to hold an unsanctioned Pride event in St. Petersburg on June 25th. An Associated Press photographer said some right-wing thugs assaulted the activists before police finally moved in. One suspected attacker was also reportedly detained. The abortive event was held beside a monument to city founder Peter the Great because, one of the organizers said, he founded a city with European values. The LGBT detainees were released the following day and fined the equivalent of $35 for participating in an illegal public action. But they face an additional charge of disobeying police orders, which can bring up to 15 days in jail.
But thousands marched down Paseo de la Reforma in Mexico City for one of the largest pride events in Latin America. Winged angels waving rainbow flags from atop sound trucks filled the leafy boulevard on the way to the Zócalo, the capital's main square.
Local media reported hundreds of Costa Rican LGBT rights supporters marched through downtown San Jose to celebrate Gay Pride Festival 2011 on June 26th. The parade was led by a large flatbed truck on which singers and dancers entertained the crowd along the parade route. Marchers also waved signs and chanted slogans demanding tolerance and respect for sexual diversity.
Cuba saw its first Pride celebration in Havana on June 28th. Sexologist Mariela Castro, the daughter of President Raul Castro, has led a Day Against Homophobia march in recent years, but even though only about a dozen Cubans took part, it was the first time that an LGBT Pride event was held in downtown Havana. Other Latin American Pride events were reportedly held in Colombia, Chile, and El Salvador.
And an estimated 4 million people danced and marched through downtown Sao Paulo, Brazil, on June 26th in what organizers call the world's largest Pride parade. This year's theme was Love One Another, Enough with Homophobia. While LGBT rights groups describe Brazil as a relatively open society, they've reported a sharp increase in homophobic and transphobic murders and assaults in recent years.
Meanwhile, a judge in Sao Paulo this week approved what's being described as Brazil's first legal same-gender marriage. The ruling by Sao Paulo State Judge Fernando Henrique Pinto allowed Sergio Kaufman Sousa and Luis André Moresi to convert their civil union into a civil marriage. While Brazil's Supreme Court approved civil unions for same-gender couples in May, it refused to open civil marriage to them. Judge Pinto decided, however, that the country's constitution demanded equal treatment. His ruling also cited the resolution passed in the United Nations in mid-June, calling for an end to discrimination against sexual minorities. The happy couple has been together for more than 8 years and filed for civil union designation in May, less than 2 weeks after the Supreme Court ruling allowed them to do so. They asked the state court in early June to recognize their civil union as a civil marriage. It's not yet clear if the court decision sets a legal precedent in Latin America's largest country, but the ruling can be appealed. Following what is reportedly standard practice in Brazil, a lawyer from the Sao Paulo State Attorney General's Office, José Luis Bednarski, offered his endorsement of Judge Pinto's decision. He also cited the federal constitution in his statement, noting that the Brazilian government establishes as a fundamental objective to promote the good of everyone without bias of gender or any other form of discrimination.
The American Medical Association is also prescribing civil marriage equality for same-gender couples. A new policy statement issued by the influential organization this week calls exclusion of lesbian and gay couples from legal marriage recognition discriminatory. It urges legal recognition to better address health disparities that same-gender couples and their families face. And it says that the association will support measures providing same-sex households with the same rights and privileges to health care, health insurance, and survivor benefits as afforded opposite-sex households. The AMA is only the latest professional healthcare organization to endorse equality. The American Psychological Association, the American Psychiatric Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists already support marriage equality for gay and lesbian couples.
Most LGBT activist groups have given a thumbs down to the civil unions bill passed in Rhode Island this week. The legislation includes strong exemptions for religious institutions, which critics charge will perpetuate discrimination. Gordon Fox, the openly gay House Speaker, refused to bring a marriage equality bill to a vote in his chamber earlier this year, claiming that passage wasn't possible there, and noting in addition that the leader of the Senate vocally opposed opening marriage to lesbian and gay couples. Independent Rhode Island Governor Lincoln Chafee, a strong advocate for marriage equality, is expected to sign the civil unions bill in what he's previously described as the first step in an evolving process. But Marriage Equality Rhode Island and several other state LGBT advocacy groups called on Chafee to veto the bill because it offers less than equal status to same-gender couples. And many of those couples are telling reporters that they will spurn civil unions and wait until full marriage equality is offered before they tie their knots.
Seven same-gender couples, along with many of their children, are suing the state of New Jersey for full civil marriage equality. They're represented by the LGBT advocacy groups Garden State Equality and Lambda Legal. The lawsuit says that there's ample evidence that civil unions, enacted in 2007, failed to provide gay and lesbian couples with genuine equality. The state Supreme Court had ordered the legislature to extend rights and protections equivalent to marriage to same-gender couples, but the ruling didn't require that the equality be called marriage. Many private companies and even state government agencies have refused to recognize civil union partners in critical medical and legal situations. LGBT advocacy groups tried to get the state Supreme Court to revisit the original case again last year, but were rebuffed, leading to the latest lawsuit.
And finally, Time Online reported this week that LGBT people in China are abandoning the social networking website Douban because it's been censoring content by and for sexual minorities. Several LGBT groups charged that their posts for events on the once popular website were disappearing and called for a boycott. Some have moved to smaller websites to communicate their messages. "We all know that LGBT groups love Douban," wrote one Beijing rights group in a letter to the website. "You once aspired to freedom, independence, and equality, but now you have broken our hearts."
That's News Wrap for the week ending July 2nd, 2011. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and produced by Steve Pride. Read the text of this week's News Wrap online at thiswayout.org. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupre.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
Extra, extra, read all about it, extra.
Have you checked our website for the latest This Way Out update? For a review of recent programming and behind-the-scenes news about your favorite international LGBT radio show, just log on to www.thiswayout.org.
This Way Out chat gay Steve Pride has charms to soothe a savage spokes gay who famously wore an Evolve Already button to a recent LGBT White House reception and who grand marshaled New York City's 41st annual Pride Parade on June 26th.
Dan Savage is author of the internationally syndicated relationship and sex column, Savage Love, editorial director of the Seattle weekly newspaper, The Stranger, and a regular contributor to PRI's This American Life. But these days, he's even better known for a message that started a movement.
Hi, everybody. It's me, Kathy.
Hi, I'm Chris Colfer.
Hey, what's up? I'm Jake Shears.
Hi, I'm Tim Gunn, and I have a very important message for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, and questioning youth. And that is, it gets better. It really does.
Hi, I'm Thomas Roberts from MSNBC, and I wanted to make this video for anybody out there who needs to know it gets better. I know personally firsthand that it does, and I know this because I understand how hard it is when you're struggling at school or at home, when it seems that you're different and there's no one else out there like you, and no one's going to understand what's going on in your head. And then if you told them what's really going on, you fear that they wouldn't love you or be your friend anymore. And I know it because I went through all of it.
Hey guys, I'm Justin Bieber. I just wanted to say there's nothing cool about being a bully, and if you're getting bullied, make sure to tell someone, and you know, it gets better. And if you're a bystander, make sure to step in and, you know, help out.
I'm Dan Savage.
How'd you go from sex advice columnist to our national spokes gay?
Well, there's a lot of people who would object to my describing myself as the spokes gay. Stephen Colbert called me that once. You know, if nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve. I speak for myself, and I speak to gay issues and things I care about. I don't know how I went. You know, it's a mystery to me. I write the filthiest sex advice column in the world. I tell a lot of dirty jokes, and I somehow parlayed that into the occasional sort of serious thumb sucker in the New York Times, or the occasional, you know, heartfelt piece on This American Life. And it amazes me. You would think, based on some of the things I've said and done and written over the years, that I would be kryptonite to mainstream media, but I think the mainstream has really shifted and swamped me in the process.
What inspired you to create the It Gets Better campaign?
I was reading last fall about the suicides of Justin Aberg and Billy Lucas, and had the same reaction that so many queer adults have when we hear these stories. Like, I wish I could have talked to that kid. I wished I'd had access to that kid and been able to tell him that however bad it was right now, that as a commenter on my blog wrote, addressing Billy Lucas after his death, it gets better. Things get better. But a lot of these queer kids, they don't know it. They don't realize it. They don't think, you know, a queer 14-year-old who kills himself is saying that he can't picture a future with enough joy in it to compensate for the pain he's in now. He's also saying that he may know that there are happy, content, safe, loved gay adults out there, but he doesn't know how you get from being the bullied queer kid to that gay adult, that secure, safe, happy gay adult, because he hasn't seen it in his own family. You know, a kid who's bullied because of his race, religion, class, goes home to family members, parents of the same race, same religion, same class, who got through exactly what they're getting through and are successful adults. Queer kid goes home to no role models, no examples. And so, you know, reading about Billy Lucas and feeling like, I wish I could do something, I wish I could talk to these kids, and feeling I can't talk to these kids, I would never get permission from their parents to talk to them. And the kids who are queer who most need to hear from gay adults and get a message of hope from us about our lives and their futures are least likely to have the kind of parents who would allow them to talk to gay adults. And I was just doing on all this when it occurred to me that in the YouTube era, I didn't need permission from parents anymore to talk to their kids, whether they wanted us to or not. That I could record a video, use my column, use my podcast to encourage other LGBT adults to do the same, and just look into a camera and talk to queer kids about our lives, about how we'd been there, the trials we faced in adolescence, the bullying we experienced, and how we got from there to where we are now, and illuminate the path for them. And give them some reassurance that, however bad it is right now, that joy is coming their way, and joy that will more than compensate for what they're suffering.
Institutionalized homophobia plays a really big role in how kids feel about themselves. But on the federal level, we're making headway in a couple important areas. What impact will this make in the lives of gay kids?
The difference that the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell is going to make in a lot of gay kids' lives is that military service has always been held out as a way for kids who are in bad circumstances, who are in poverty, who don't have a family that can pay for them to go to college, can access those things, can get up and out of poverty, can get an education paid for. And all of that was closed to queer kids. So, you know, they would listen to the pitches, join the military and you can go to college, and know that that wasn't true for them. So that's a very real and immediate and tangible benefit to queer kids in the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. There's a lot of queer kids who now will have that option. I would prefer we lived in a country where people didn't have to join the military to have access to education, but, you know, you go to school with the country you have, not the country you'd like to have. It's been a Donald Rumsfeldism in our direction. And when it comes to marriage and other rights, it makes a tremendous psychological difference to know that you are a full and equal citizen, and despite what you may be hearing from your peers or even your family members, the government is on your side, that you are entitled to the same rights and responsibilities and privileges as everyone else, and you're not unequal, and you're not sinful, and you're not unfit for marriage or unfit for military service or unfit for full civil equality. And that can be a boost.
You and your partner were married in Vancouver. How did that change your relationship?
I don't think my partner and I's decision to marry really changed our relationship. It affirmed what already existed. It affirmed the facts on the ground. We were married in our hearts. It actually changed the way some people saw our relationship, including our son. It meant a lot to him, even though he was pained by the experience of going to a wedding, going to our wedding reception, although people at the wedding reception besides Deej didn't know it was a wedding reception. he now looks at his parents and goes, they're married. And it comes up every once in a while. We'll joke about breaking up, or we'll joke about being indifferent to one another. Like Terry and I will, like, just tease each other about, I couldn't care less about you. And DJ will go, no, you guys got married. And like a lot of kids, he really is tapped into that sort of bedrock security that provides an assurance, you know, not a fail-safe assurance, because a lot of couples who marry and have kids get divorced. But it says to him that we're committed to each other and committed to him and committed to being his parents and staying together. You know, he picked out our wedding rings, which I'm wearing right now, which have a skull on them. At a rocker store, we stopped in quickly to pick up some temporary wedding rings, and we're still wearing them 7 years later. He picked out these rings that have a skull on them because marriage means you're married till you're dead, till death do you part. And he wanted us, every time we looked at our finger, to remember that Terry and I are not allowed to break up, that the only way we're ever going to not be married is if one of us dies.
Well, actually, legally, you can't get divorced in your state.
That's right.
Hi, I'm Jeff Marks, the creator of Avenue Q, the Broadway musical, and you're listening to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine.
We're talking to Dan Savage, author of the relationship and sex column, Savage Love, editorial director of Seattle's The Stranger, a regular on PRI's This American Life, and creator of the It Gets Better campaign. Dan, what was it like for you as a teenager?
I like to say I grew up in a Catholic and religious family. It's sort of two separate and distinct things. It was hard for me as a teenager. I thought about suicide. I wasn't as brutally bullied as my partner was, but I did think about suicide only in that I thought it would be easier for my parents to have a dead kid than a gay kid, that it would be the good Catholic boy, loving son, mama's boy thing to do, just to end my life so they didn't have to ever know that they had a gay kid. And so it was hard when, you know, I realized I didn't want to end my life and made up my mind that I was going to have to come out to them. It was hard. You know, for a long time I hid from them. The people I relied on the most and needed the most at the time in my life when I most needed adult input, advice, supervision, support, I couldn't go to. My brother Billy was bullied in the same middle school where I was bullied at the same time. We're very close in age. And he's straight. And he had it worse than I did. He was much more brutally bullied. And I called him when the It Gets Better campaign was launched and was going viral, just to say, I remember that you had it worse than I did. I remember. Don't think I forgot. And he said something really smart, very typically Billy. He said, yeah, I had it worse at school, but at the end of the day, I went home and I had mom and dad, and you didn't. And that's the difference for bullied queer kids compared to bullied straight kids, is we go home at the end of the day to parents who we're either not out to and so we can't ask for their support, or who are also bullying us. And then we're dragged to churches on Sunday where we're bullied from the pulpit. Straight kids who are bullied at school go home to a shoulder to cry on, and then aren't dragged to a church on Sunday where they're told that God hates nerds and band geeks. And the isolation for queer kids is worse.
What sort of feedback have you had from kids?
The response has been overwhelming. We've heard from thousands and thousands of kids who've responded at itgetsbetter.org to us, who've responded at each individual video to the person who posted that video. We've heard from parents thanking us for creating the project because it allowed them to demonstrate to their gay kids that they supported them, because they sat down at computers to watch these videos together. I've heard from parents who are in emergency rooms with their kids who attempted suicide, and they're watching the videos. They're finally talking about their kids' sexuality and watching the videos, and they're thanking us. Some of the stories we've heard are heartbreaking, and some of them are really elating. You know, we heard from a girl who's being very brutally bullied by her family, who watched a bunch of the videos, and then they didn't just give her hope for her future, they gave her hope for her family, that her family would come around, because so many of the videos are by people whose families had the same reaction hers did when she came out. Families reacted very negatively, very hostile, and who in time came around and became very loving and supportive. And so she watched the videos and didn't just think, okay, one day I'll be happy, one day I'll have friends who love and accept me. She watched the videos and thought, one day my parents won't be in the same place they're in right now. One day my parents will be better. And she sort of got hope. I mean, the whole point of the campaign was, when we launched it, we, you know, quoted Harvey Milk, you gotta give them hope. And we've heard from so many kids who it's done just that, and it's given them hope. There's never been a better time than right now to be a gay, lesbian, bi, or trans person in America. There are unfortunate incidents, there are always going to be hate crimes, and always going to be jerks. the test is how the culture and society responds when there's been a wrong. And increasingly, the society's response when it encounters anti-gay discrimination is lining up with how our society responds when it encounters anti-anything else discrimination. There's unfinished business. And DOMA, rights for trans people, healthcare, I think, is right. There's a lot left to do, but, you know, I just think of my own life. When I came out to my parents when I was a teenager, I wasn't just telling them that I would kiss boys and I liked boys. I was also telling them I would never get married. I would never have children. I would have a very marginal career, if I had a career at all. I would never be a Marine. And just in my lifetime, all of that has changed. I am married. I have children. I have a great career. And now I can be a Marine if I wanted to be a Marine. I don't want to be a Marine, but I could be a Marine. And just knowing I could be a Marine makes a difference. The world is changing for gay people.
What's next for the It Gets Better campaign?
The It Gets Better campaign is now a standalone website at itgetsbetter.org. We've raised tens of thousands of dollars for the Trevor Project, which talks kids off the ledge. GLSEN, which helps improve environments in schools so we have fewer queer kids crawling out on the ledge. And the ACLU's Lesbian and Gay Bi-Trans Youth Project, which doesn't get the credit or support from the gay community that it deserves. They do tremendous work. And moving into the future, what we want to do is maintain the website, catalog and tag all the videos so that, you know, a trans kid can go to the website and call up all the trans videos and raise enough money to maintain the website, and then every year around the beginning of school do some outreach, do some advertising. A lot of kids have found out about the It Gets Better campaign through People magazine and reports on the news and things in the newspaper and stuff on the radio, and there's been a lot of talk about it. That chatter is going to die down. And so, you know, there's a kid who's 4 years old now who's going to be 14 in 10 years who may need to see these videos. We have to make sure that there's enough outreach and enough money for the outreach 10 years from now that that kid can find his way to the website.
And kids are coming out at a younger and younger age.
I knew. Well, think about when you were 12. My son knew he was straight at like 10, 11. You know, my son had to come out to us about being straight. We had told him the odds were 95-ish percent that he would be straight, and we wouldn't be surprised if he was straight. But, you know, there was a moment where he's like, yeah, I'm straight. And nobody's surprised when a 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kid knows he's straight. But even gay people are surprised when a kid that young knows he's gay.
This has been a conversation with husband, father, author, activist, Dan Savage. For more information online, check out itgetsbetter.org. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
I know you're lonely, but please know that you're not the only kid out there who's been in that spot. My friends and I made it through, and we're doing fine. It gets better, I swear. It gets better, but you've got to stick around to make it there. It's hard to stand on your own, but you're stronger than you know. It gets better. It gets better, I swear. If you have friends and family who are true and stand by you through the pain, let them be your shelter from the rain. But if you feel you need to hide to come out the other side, well, that's okay too. Whatever gets you through, 'cause it gets better, I swear. It gets better, but you've gotta stick around and make it there. It's hard to stand on your own, but you're stronger than you know. It gets better. It gets better, I swear. It gets better. It gets better, I swear.
For choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Chris Wilson, John Beaupre, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Jeffrey Altergott sang It Gets Better, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and the generosity of our listeners. Log on to thiswayout.org for more information. That's where you can also link up with our podcasts, our blog, and our Facebook fan page, read news wrap, subscribe to our CDs, and check out what we look like. Follow TWO Radio on Twitter, email TWORadio@AOL.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening on KCSB Santa Barbara, California, KOPN Columbia, Missouri, 2HOT Cobar, New South Wales, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now, y'all, stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Hey, this is the Blues Hound, and I'd like to tell you about Blues on the Back Porch. On Sunday, July 10, we're having a little backyard fundraiser right here at KPFT, 4 to 8 p.m., and all of you are invited. Kicking off the show will be John Egan, who you won't want to miss, followed by everyone's favorite, the Mighty Orc, and headline the event from Los Angeles, master storyteller and guitar whiz, Doug McLeod. $10 will get you in the backyard for an up-close and personal show benefiting your listener-sponsored community radio, 90.1 FM KPFT. Bring your lawn chairs, coolers, and sunscreen, but please, no glass containers. Once again, that's Blues on the Back Porch, Sunday, July 10th, from 4 to 8 p.m. at 419 Lovett Boulevard. Hope to see you all there. KPFT Houston.
Widely seen as the channel of reference for coverage of the Middle East and Global South, Al Jazeera English can now be heard on 90.1 KPFT. Al Jazeera English has become a world leader in the coverage of Africa, Asia, the Middle East, Europe, and the Americas. You can hear Al Jazeera English weekdays from 5 to 6 a.m. on KPFT FM and HD1, or at 9 a.m. weekdays on KPFT HD2. Al Jazeera English has received many awards for its reporting. With a staff of more than 1,000 from 50 different countries, the aim of Al Jazeera English is to provide independent and impartial news for an international audience. Again, you can hear Al Jazeera English weekdays from 5 to 6 a.m. on KPFT and HD1, or at 9 a.m. weekdays on KPFT HD2. Visit kpft.org for a complete program schedule. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
There are places you go to get the quick news. You know the kind. Those three-line summaries of world issues and events.
The celebrity gossip.
The intellectual junk food.
And then there's public radio.
You tune to KPFT each day because you need more than the summary.
You need to hear the whole discussion to make informed decisions.
You need to understand the background, to understand the cultures, ideas, and history that touch our lives.
You want music from more than five corporations. You need a choice.
And that's why you tune to community radio, because you have to know more. People like you support KPFT to keep us on the air.
So visit kpft.org today to become a member of this station.
This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston.
tune into KPFT, you notice something right away.
No ads.
KPFT is a non-commercial radio station. We don't accept advertising or underwriting from businesses, nor does KPFT receive payment for any program we air. KPFT further disallows product plugging or endorsements. We do this because you, the listener, deserve access to the radio you love.
Without all the commercials, taglines, and cross-promotion that corporate radio subjects you to.
If you ever hear something on KPFT that you have concerns about, please contact our program director at 713-526-4000 during regular business hours. If you enjoy this kind of option on Houston's airwaves, become a member. KPFT is able to stay commercial-free because listeners like you make a pledge of support to keep us on the air. Your pledge is important. Call our membership department at 713-526-4000 or visit kpft.org to support KPFT with a pledge. Jason, can you give us that number again?
713-526-4000 or kpft.org to become a member.
KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Well, Buena Vista is totally gay. It's about looking for sex and having sex in Buena Vista Park. I don't know that you can get gayer than that. And it's just so evocative of San Francisco in the 70s.
There's a chill in my bedroom, a storm in the park. What with these guys in their Levi's just out for a lark? I know I missed my dinner. I know you know that I've been in Buena Vista, striking matches in the wind. Well, it's a series of signals, innuendos, and keys, and it's a lovely combination of romance and sleep. And I can always take those scratches with a silly kind of grin in Buena Vista, striking matches in the wind. Go passing any judgment, don't go cutting down the trees. Sonny, I've seen you from my window, brushing the dirt from your knees. I'm in control of where I'm going. It could end or begin in Buena Vista, striking matches in the wind. In Buena Vista, striking matches in the wind. So there.
That was Stephen Grossman singing Buena Vista, recorded in 1991, and it starts off a very special edition of Queer Music Heritage. This is J.D. Doyle, and I've been waiting to do this show for years. The show is about the release of a CD of material recorded by Stephen Grossman in early May of 1991, about 6 weeks before his death on June 23rd. Grossman is one of my gay music heroes, and here's one of the reasons why. Not only was he one of the earliest artists to record lyrically gay material, but he was the first to have an album released on a major label. The label was Mercury, and the album was called Caravan Tonight, released in April of 1974. By the way, parts 2 and 3 of this show are devoted entirely to that first album, and will include some special interviews. To put things in perspective, it was only the year before Grossman's album that the first privately released lesbian album came out by Alex Dobkin. And Olivia Records started their long run of releases also in 1974. So an openly gay album on a major label was a big deal. Now, unfortunately, it did not open any floodgates, as it apparently did not sell as the label had hoped. So another release was not done. But it gave hope and an example to other gay and lesbian artists and to their fans. It was a bit of gay visibility long overdue. Before we get into more music from the new album, I want to share perhaps the most known song from the 1974 Caravan Tonight album, and it's my favorite. The song is called Out, and the version I'm sharing is a live one from a radio concert from 1975. So even if you know his work, it's likely you've never heard it done live. Stephen Grossman and Out.
Mama, dear mama, have something important to say. Yes, I know you didn't plan on me turning out this way. Well, you didn't fail me, Mom. And I don't love you any less. 'Cause for me, it's just a matter of what suits me best. Well, I know it's hard for you to take. And it's nothing you would brag when you're first born. Turns out to be a. Now, Papa, Papa, did I spoil your dreams? I know you wanted to see me marching in the Marines. Papa, that won't prove my manhood, as it didn't prove yours. I went to talk to that landlord while you stood behind the door. Well, I hear you calling me crazy, but I think it's out of fear, 'cause you're not so sure that you aren't. Now, brother, hey, little brother, tell me what you're gonna do if everything that has happened to me someday happens to you. Will you try to grin and bear it? Will you hate yourselves inside? Or will you walk with me in the sunshine? Said I feel that the sun's gonna shine and we won't have to hide. But there are all kinds of people who happen to be this way. And there's really nothing wrong with being, oh, the way you choose to, yeah. Nothing wrong with being, I tell you it's okay. Nothing wrong with being gay.
That track was from a radio show called Fruit Punch, hosted by Steve O'Neill on KPFA in Berkeley, and it is courtesy of the GLBT Historical Society in San Francisco, and is the first of three live tracks you'll hear during this hour. When no follow-up to the Caravan Tonight album happened, Stephen Grossman did continue writing, though not prolifically. And he performed often in San Francisco, where he lived in those years, and that included several radio performances. Stephen's life was cut short by AIDS, and it was only through the efforts of his close friends that recordings of a number of his unreleased songs were done, and this is that story. The album, released 20 years after his death, is called Something in the Moonlight, and the opening song, Buena Vista, was actually the only song to be released earlier. It appeared on a 1998 various artist compilation called Fruit Cocktail. and you heard the voice of Richard Jaworkin introing it at the start of the show. Richard will tell much of this story, but I don't want to get too far without sharing with you more music from the new Grossman CD. So here's an early song written by Stephen when he still lived in New York City about missing a boyfriend named Chris who had moved to San Francisco. Here's the song, California Now.
I've been going out nightly, doesn't much matter where. I get home every day or so to water my plants and check the mail. Go out for the evening paper, watch the children at the candy store. Pass the grocery and the fruit stand. I don't shop much anymore. It seems we came to a decision, but I swear I don't remember how. No, it's selfish to ask, but must you be in California now? Must you be? California now. We call it a vacation. I needed time to be alone. I said I'd come to live with you in half a year when all my work here was done. My producers bought me this piano. My writing, well, it's coming along. But for the sad preoccupation that finds its way into every song, it seems we came to an agreement, but I swear I don't remember how. I know it's crazy to ask, but must you be in California now? Must you be in California now? There are others who dream. I don't suspect you'll be lonely, that I could see you before our time. I go with men from the bar who ask me for my company, but there just isn't that connection. You'd call me blood. You would call me blood. I'd call you family. It seems we came to a decision, but I swear I don't remember how. Yet I believe we'll be together, even though you're in California now. I believe in California now.
Richard Dworkin was assistant producer on the new Stephen Grossman album, and I'm pleased to say that I've known him for a number of years. He's an active session drummer and was a member of the jazz ensemble Microscopic Septet and played on a number of albums in my collection, including those of Doug Stevens and the Outband, David Clement, Blackberry, and he played on and produced the albums of another hero of mine, Michael Callen, both as a solo artist and with the Flirtations. And Richard was also in the popular San Francisco very gay band, Buena Vista. But this interview's focus was on Stephen Grossman, so I started by asking how they met.
While I was working with Buena Vista and after I worked with Buena Vista, I worked briefly with Stephen Grossman. I met Stephen shortly after we moved to San Francisco in about 1975. Would run into him socially. Eventually, we came to play a few gigs together. Stephen wasn't performing very much by then, and I was always encouraging him to do so and encouraging him to write more songs and record more. I remember playing with him at a place called The City in San Francisco, which was in fact a disco. It was the place where Buena Vista was filmed for the movie Word Is Out, actually. Actually, Stephen was my last roommate in San Francisco. He was looking for a place to live, and I had a spare room in my flat in the Castro, and Stephen moved into that room.
How long did you room together?
A year or two, and then I moved to New York.
So you were probably pretty involved with his music.
To the extent that he was making music, which was not a large extent, I was very involved with it, yes. Stephen was not a prolific songwriter. As far as I know, there is less than 36 tunes of his that exist. But basically, Stephen sort of gave up on music. Yeah, he sort of gave up on it. It was after the Mercury album, and he had toured with that, and he had moved to San Francisco, and he'd come back to New York in 1976 to meet again with his producers to talk about making a new album. And basically, the impression I got was they said, well, it's sort of too gay, and that's not going to fly now, which is sort of ironic considering that they saw his producer signed him on the basis that he was gay. But in the commercial atmosphere of music in 1976, they felt that he shouldn't be so explicit. Stephen wrote about this in the song The Last Pioneers about that trip to New York.
So didn't he write much after that?
I don't think he wrote much after that. He didn't perform much after that. Yeah, I don't know if he had 24 public performances the rest of his life.
And they solicited him as a gay artist.
Correct.
Do you remember the time leading up to that with him?
Oh, on the Mercury record. I didn't know him then. Stephen's album Caravan Tonight was released in 1974. We can talk about that to the extent that I know about it if you want.
Yeah.
Here's how Stephen came to make Caravan Tonight, as far as I know and recall, is that he read a classified ad in the Village Voice that was soliciting a gay singer-songwriter to make a record. And it said tapes only. And he didn't have a tape. Stephen was pretty young then. I think he was 22, 23 years old. But he called the number and he said, look, I don't have a tape, but give me 5 minutes. Just give me 5 minutes. And he said he heard the guy saying, hold on, and conferring with somebody else. And they said, okay, you know, be at such and such a place at such and such a time. And he went and auditioned and he got the gig. This was in New York City. Stephen was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York.
How did you come to get the material for the new CD?
What happened was, well, I should back up and preface that by saying Stephen had the good fortune to go to high school in Brooklyn with Judith Castleberry and Jacques Dupre, of the musical group Castleberry and Dupre, and they were his lifelong friends. And it was Judith Castleberry who encouraged Stephen to record more of his songs in the early 90s. Stephen was ill with AIDS. He had Kaposi sarcoma. And Judith encouraged him to come to New York and do some recording with me and with some other people. And Stephen came here, and we had some meetings about the project. And Stephen had what turned out to be his last birthday party, at which he performed. The last time I saw Stephen was on 13th Street near the Gay Community Center here in New York, and it was the fall, and he said, "It's just too cold, I have to go home." Sort of implicit in that was the idea that we would never make this recording. However, Judith Castleberry came to his house one day and said, "Stephen, we're going to the recording studio." I mean, he was very, very sick. He was not even dressing and going outside, as I understand. And so he said, "It's totally impossible, couldn't possibly, I'm too sick, no way, I'm not getting dressed." She said, "Yes, get your clothes on, we are going." And I think she's probably the only person who could get away with that and whom he would obey in that situation, or trust enough to go with. And so he went with her to a recording studio, and they recorded with guitar accompaniment an album's worth of material. It was about a month or two before he died in June of 1991. I believe he was 39, so it would have been 91.
And what happened to the tapes after that?
Well, in 1993, we worked on it a lot. There was some money to work on it, and Judith was the producer of this project, and I was sort of the concert master in terms of finding musicians to play on it, in some cases arrangers. So we did a lot of work on it in terms of putting backup tracks on it in 1993, but the money ran out, and Judith moved on to other things in her life, and I got very busy doing Michael Callan's Legacy album, and it sort of sat there for a long time until recently, when we scared up a little money to finish it.
And what's the name of the project?
Stephen's new album, Something in the Moonlight.
Is that one of the songs?
It is indeed one of the songs. It's one of the last, or perhaps the last song that Stephen wrote. It's sort of pondering the possibility of an afterlife, which I'm sure Stephen was pondering at that point in his life. Something in the Moonlight.
Not that you're here, though I know you're away. Why do you take up my time? Have you come to stay? We don't talk like we used to. In fact, you never say a word, but crawling inside me, climbing up the stairs. They try to tell me you couldn't be there, but it's the same preoccupation I think of you the most. When they ask me, I ask them, do you believe in ghosts? Something's in the moonlight just outside the door, parachuting silently, coming to haunt me some more. Something in the moonlight, could it be a rebellious star?
everyone to be. What do you do with your time and eternity? Still thoughtless, in limbo, are you screaming? In a war or overdose, when they ask us, can we tell them we want to be a ghost? Some days in the moonlight, just outside the door, parachuting silently, coming to haunt me some more. Some things in the moonlight, could it be a rebellious star? Come to earth to tell me of a home afar. Will I recognize you? How much more can you see? When I make up my mind, will you come and get me? Judgment or celestial fun to spend forever in the light, or forever will I rose? When they ask me, I tell them I believe in ghosts. Some things in the moonlight, just outside the door, parachuting silently, coming to haunt me some more. Some days in the moonlight, could it be a rebellious star? Come to earth to tell me of a home afar.
Can you talk about some of the other songs on the album?
Well, my favorite two cuts on the album are my favorite Stephen Grossman songs, Post Caravan Tonight, which are A Greasy Griddle and A Short Order Cook, or Greasy Griddle, as I've been calling it for 25 years, and the song Buena Vista, which actually has already appeared on Mitch Gallup's Fruit Cocktail compilation. Greasy Griddle, I had always envisioned as sort of a big band arrangement. One of the things we had to consider in producing this record, which I think Judith Castleberry did a really good job of working with, is the nature of Stephen's vocal performances, which are, well, first there's his register, which is sort of low, certainly for a pop singer of this era. And they're sort of subdued, you know. He didn't have a lot of energy at that point in his life. Not that they're lacking energy, but they're just not, they're not like shout outs or anything, you know.
Projecting.
He was projecting enough, but it's not the kind of thing that you could put a big band behind and have the big band not overwhelm it. So what we came up with was an a cappella arrangement. I paired Stephen with one of my favorite a cappella groups, the Bobs, who originated in San Francisco. So that seemed sort of appropriate as well. And so That's what you'll hear, is Stephen singing in front of the Bobs on the song Greasy Griddle, A Greasy Griddle and a Short Order Cook, which is about sort of flirting with a guy, with a short order cook. And I always envisaged that occurring in a place called Andy's Donuts, which was a late night hangout on Castro Street in the 70s.
In a Castro cafe after hours, craving burgers, buns, and fries, I was reaching for hot sauce and salt on the counter when the flip of the neck caught my eye. There was a crazy wrist action that started the attraction, the sunny side over that got me to look. I couldn't ask for a better sight. On a long and a cold Monday night, they began a greasy griddle, a short order cook. A greasy griddle and a short order cook. You got a hell of a lot of work, but be a hell of a lot of cooking tonight. Tonight, tonight, tonight. You got a hell of a lot of work, but be a hell of a lot of cooking tonight. Waiters in sneakers chasing the air, carrying water, checks and change. I was trying to stay steady, but my feet began to swivel to the sound of something sizzling on the range. It wasn't a fishy frying that got me sighing, but a voice so cheery that everything shook. A Broadway evening couldn't be finer than the show that was playing at the diner. A greasy griddle, a short order cook. Boy, a greasy griddle and a short order cook. You got a hell of a lot of work, will be a hell of a lot of cooking tonight. Tonight, tonight, tonight. You got a hell of a lot of work, will be a hell of a lot of cooking tonight.
Now how about another cup of coffee?
No, no.
Another piece of pie?
No, whoa, there's only one thing I'm wanting to go. Well, it's a quarter to four and I ought to be at home, covered up and cozy with some cuddly guy. If the temp does get before, then when it's time to go, I'm gonna look for that neon sign in the sky where the muffins are puffing and the kitchen is hopping. I will never again settle for a rocker and book. The equator couldn't be much hotter than the time I will make when I've got a greasy griddle, a short order cook. Boy, a greasy griddle and a short order cook. Boy, a greasy griddle and a short order cook. Boy, a greasy griddle and a short order cook. Boy, a greasy griddle and a short order cook. Do you, a short order cook? Hey, yeah.
Can you please talk about the song Winter Story?
Well, Winter Story is a song about Stephen missing Austin. And Austin is the boyfriend Stephen wrote about in the title tune from his album, Caravan Tonight. The first line, of course, of the first song on Stephen's record is, Austin, you've got that gypsy in your eye.
There's a storm in the making, my windows are shaking, newspapers swirl in the sky. Oh, the radio this morning gave overcast warnings. I was never good at taking goodbyes. Join plans. My friend, we had no way to know, to know, to know if a summer's worth of kisses in the sand could build us a castle in the snow. It's a winter story, the jealousy, the glory, camphor, the soul, the season to hold it. Numbing of life, flowing water to ice,
the muffs and the sneeze and a damp, ominous breeze. I was never good at taking goodbyes. Do you remember how we were together last? My friend, there's no way I know that the flower of a seed miscast can carry its own through the snow. It's a winter story, the trickery, the glory, credit at the store and blankets for the poor. It's a chilling of blood, cleansing water to mud. The tinsel and the star and an ominous wind from afar. The winter story, the jealousy, the fury, fire in the trash and flurries on the lash. It's a coming of frost and I'm missing you, Boston. You're quiet and you're strong, your body so willing and warm, willing and warm. I was never good at taking, never, never good at taking. I was never good at taking goodbyes.
You heard Richard talk about Stephen's boyfriend at that time, Austin. And here's something you may not expect. I've got some comments from that very same person. He's Austin Noto, and while they were not a couple long, they remained friends until Stephen's death. Before those interview comments, though, I think I'll first let you hear the song that talks about Austin, the title track from Caravan Tonight. But instead of the album version, here's a live track from a radio performance, complete with Stephen introducing it.
Thank you kindly. I was raised in New York, and California was always a place for me where I would come for refuge whenever I was freaking out, or whenever I just smashed up with somebody, or whatever. I'd get on, find the easiest transportation I could, and just get out here as quick as I can. And the first time I was here, this song came about 2 days after I got here on the piano, which I don't play too well, but suddenly it just happened. It's called Caravan Tonight.
Austin, you got that gypsy in your eye. We have 4 good months behind us. Now you think I'm too possessive, though your head is on my knee. Your mind is just outside of town. Your ears are ringing for that carefree tambourine. There's a caravan tonight. It will be passing by our window. We have many years before us. Last night while you were sleeping, I put patches on your pants. And I watched you in your dreams, and I waited for the sun to bring you home, to bring you home, to bring you home. Now if the freedom your heart embraces is nothing but a vision in the sand, you know I'll be waiting here, I'll be your oasis. Be your promise, your promised land. Austin, you got that fever in your head. You say security confines you.
My laughter weighs you down. You know the fault is in our years. There's no difference in desire. Here I used to wander with my father's violin. There's a caravan tonight. It approaches in the market. There's a rushing of flounces and rhythm swinging feet. There's a boy in scarlet sashes, and he's calling out the names of the lovers that he left here once before, once before, once before. Now if the freedom your heart embraces is nothing but a vision in the sand, you know I've been waiting here. I'll be your oasis, I'll be your promise, your promised land, your promised land, your promised land. Austin, you got that gypsy rack. There's a boy outside that window with the moon upon his shoulders. Though your kisses on my lips, your senses rich beyond control. Your heart, it's racing with his crazy castanets. There's a caravan tonight. I can hear it in the distance. You had many years before you. Last night while you were sleeping, I put patches on your pants and watched you in your dreams. And I waited for the sun to bring you home.
That was another track from the radio show Fruit Punch from August of 1975 and courtesy of the GLBT Historical Society in San Francisco. And I thank Austin Noto for these comments about Stephen.
The song Caravan Tonight was directed to you, starting with the lyrics, Austin, you've got that gypsy in your eye. Can you tell me about the inspiration for that song?
Well, the best I could put it as is that I was 17 years old and very young and naive and not really knowing if, you know, the first person I met was the one I was going to spend the rest of my life with.
And were you a couple or boyfriends or what?
Yes. We were a couple. And as the song says, for 4 months. As he says in the song, we have 4 good months behind us.
Did you know about the song before it appeared on the album?
He told me when he was recording it, and I actually went to the studio while they were recording the album and got to watch them making it. It's funny because when he wrote a song to me when we first got together, and I asked him to take my name out of it because I was basically 17 and still in the closet, and I guess once we broke up, he felt all bets were off. And I'm actually glad he did, you know, use my name.
Can you talk a little bit about Stephen as a person?
He's probably one of the smartest people I've ever met. He was, I don't know, just always trying to do the right thing and had a great sense of humor, very funny. And I was honored to have known him.
I've gotten the impression he was kind of a, if you will, a quiet performer. Kind of a mellow and soft-spoken and...
Yes, you're right. He just had the ability to make people cry. He just actually, you know, knew how to get to those places that get people right to the core.
Did you happen to be around when the album came out to know his reaction to how it was received and so forth?
Yeah, he played lots of places. I think he was hoping he would have sold better, but, you know, he had the opportunity to come back and make more music, but his producers wanted him to change all the nouns to make the whole thing heterosexual. And he said no, and they said, well, then we're not doing it. So that's actually why he only recorded one album.
The album got pretty good promotion at first. I found large ads for it in magazines.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't look like Mercury followed up on it much.
No, I think once they saw that the sales weren't what they thought it was going to be, they just decided to cut their losses. That's my guess.
Yeah, I think the market at that time, maybe Mercury was thinking they would tap into the glam market.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's not, that was, that couldn't be further from, you know, he was more like a gay Cat Stevens rather than a gay
David Bowie.
Right.
Did you know that Twiggy recorded Caravan Tonight?
Yes, I did, and actually Stephen loved it because he said he really didn't like her version, but he did enjoy the royalty checks. Yeah, we got a big laugh. I actually have it on my iPod.
Is there anything else I should ask you about Stephen, or anything else, comments you want to make?
Like I said, it was definitely an honor to know him, and I'm very glad I did, and he just meant more than you could ever know to me. Thank you again for all you've done for Stephen.
I'm glad to spread the word.
And you hear that music in the background? I thought this would be a good time to slip in just a bit of the version of the song Caravan Tonight you heard Austin Noto and I just talk about. It's done by 70s supermodel Twiggy. It's from her self-titled debut album from 1976. I've got another special treat from that same 1975 concert, including the live version you heard of the song Caravan Tonight, was an unreleased song. And as it's not on the new album, it's still unreleased. And I'm delighted to be likely the only person to play the song on the radio in the last 36 years. I am again grateful to my source for this, and am including their intro to Stephen Grossman and the song Siamese Twins.
The following historic audio is brought to you by the GLBT Historical Society. Join us today and help open our new museum in San Francisco's Castro District. To find out more, visit our webpage at glbthistory.org.
There's this real popular syndrome that I see going around. It's probably been going around a long time. And how best can I explain it? It has to do a lot with just feeling yourself incomplete, feeling you're only half until you find Mr. or Ms. or whatever, everything, you know? And then when you find that person, you become one and all that, and isolate yourself from everybody else, and it just progresses into sometimes madness. And this song is about kind of some of those symptoms that you'll find in an ailing relationship. I call it Siamese twins.
Coupledom is fine. If you remember who you are. But I'm afraid this kind of marriage, my friend, might be taking it a bit too far. We ride the D train in the morning, swinging on the same strap. You wear my pants and my sneakers, the shirt off my back. Sometimes you can't even tell where your body ends and my touch begins. I swear we should have been born as Siamese twins. They tell me exercise some freedom, get out and do something on your own. But I feel guilty if I leave you by yourself, and oh, so worried if I'm the first one home. Now I go to hope in a letter, I see both of our names. We share all of the credit, but take all of the blame. We play confession Sunday mornings, we repent the same sin. I swear we should have been born as Siamese twins. And so it seems we are ever searching for that liberated household in the sky. We talk menages and praising and consciousness raising, but we seldom go and give it a try. I
I play the chords with my left hand and you strum with the right. We have repetitious arguments, identical gripes. Now with a local anesthetic and a small piece of skin, well, we could really tie the knot like Siamese twins. We could really tie the knot like Siamese twins.
Here's a very special surprise. The GLBT Historical Society has also provided me with a video of that concert, with Stephen singing five songs. You'll find a link to that from my website, where I've got an extensive Stephen Grossman tribute section. This is J.D. Doyle, and again, I'm very pleased to be honoring the music of Stephen Grossman on Queer Music Heritage this month. Part two of the show will include an interview with Judith Castleberry, Stephen's good friend and the executive producer of the new CD. And there's more. Part two will also include Stephen singing three songs from another live radio performance from 1976. I want to close with my favorite song from the new album, and it really captures the spirit of why I love his music. In his history, it was when Stephen met again with his producers at Mercury Records to discuss a follow-up album. He was essentially told, not unless he dropped the gay stuff, to which he would not agree. I'm going back to Richard Dworkin to let him introduce the song, Last Pioneers.
Oh, Last Pioneers. Well, that's a song about Stephen coming to New York in 1976 when bicentennial celebrations were happening in New York, sort of juxtaposing a bird's eye view of New York Harbor and the Statue of Liberty against an image of, what does Stephen say, from the brothers who can't disguise it even in men's clothing and the sisters who just do not pass, comes the spirit of my people, courage over fear, the last pioneers.
You control what I watch on the TV, what I dance to at the bar. You get your hands into everything, try to get me to look like what you are. Well, I may wear your fashions and work at 9 to 5, but I told you all along, there are some things that I won't compromise. Now those rebel people didn't warn me, they said I was too direct. So I went home and I trashed myself. My friend Jay said, what'd you expect? They want you to live a lie so you'll get on the radio. But you keep on doing, what you do is the poet is telling the show. I said, I know, I know. But the brothers who can't disguise it, even in men's clothing, and the sisters who just do my best. Don't just give it up. Have a present, ought to have the pride, but you were so disrespectful. On your birthday I just cried. There's a fleet of ships on the Hudson, and they sent us open hand. And when he offered me passage, I said, there is no promised land. On the rooftop,
said, let that old girl sing. Tonight I'm feeling righteous. I've got my music and my chords. And though the silence may be screaming, I can only hear applause. From the covers of cat disguises, even in men's clothes and the sisters who just do not fail.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Day at 9, KPFT features programming by you. It's called Open Journal, and it's an experiment in truly community radio. On Open Journal, regular listeners just like you come into KPFT studios to host their own programs. Sometimes it's talk, sometimes it's music, but it's always unique. Open Journal airs weekdays at 9 a.m. right after BBC headlines. The community spotlight at 9:30 is here for you. Open Journal is what community radio is all about. You can even participate and host your own Open Journal. Just drop by KPFT's website at kpft.org to download an Open Journal application. We provide the help, you provide the knowledge. Tune in to Open Journal at 9 a.m. weekdays. This is KPFT Houston.
Tune at 3 p.m. weekdays for some of KPFT's finest talk, as well as your calls and community. On Mondays, catch Bob Sanborn and Manny Kimball on Growing Up in America. On Tuesdays, tune into Earth 101 with hosts Hataji Abdul-Aziz Hear Connect the Dots on Wednesdays with Minister Robert Muhammad, tackling local and national issues. New Capital is on Thursdays at 3. Host Leo Gold talks with you about economics, the environment, philosophy, and law. And don't miss Partisan Gridlock with Jeff Berg on Fridays. Talk about national politics. That's weekdays at 3 p.m. And don't forget to catch our evening rebroadcast of Democracy Now! At 5 p.m. This is Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free, KPFT Houston.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us.